proclamation for transformation. What does that mean? Today I'm going to share a little bit about what we talk about in our vision statement. Jeff introduced it yesterday, that the vision of the Evangelical Free Church is to see 1 million disciple makers impacting 100 million lives with the gospel and 100 Acts 19 locations or cities and regions around the world. How does that look? How does that play out in the world today? What does that mean? I mean, I get excited about it. Our mission statement hasn't changed. We still exist to glorify God by multiplying transformational churches among all people. Actually, our mission statement did change just a little, because a healthy church is a transformational church. They're seeing transformation through the gospel. But if I'm sitting in the church, in the pew, every Sunday, and I love my church, and I love the preaching, what does that mean to me as a lay leader or layman in the pew? Multiplying transformational churches among all people. Well, my church isn't planting churches. Maybe it is, so I might know how that works. But unless I'm actively involved in church planting in some way, I might get lost in that, not really get excited about what's happening. I can get really excited about the vision. I can raise my hand and say, hey, I want to be one of the 1 million. I know the people that I'm going to pour my life into to help make disciples. I can get excited about knowing what my role is as a member of a church. I have the privilege of working in Reach Global, of living in a sandbox. That's Tim's metaphor for who we are as an organization. We get to play in the sandbox, and you can, as long as you're within the sandbox, you can dig as deep as you want. You can do anything you want within the sandbox. We have clarity around what we want to do as a mission. And he was rolling out this sandbox analogy when I joined the mission, and it's like, you know, I really resonate with this. But what does our sandbox look like? We have our mission. Our mission happens to be the same as the Evangelical Free Church of America's mission. Why? Because we're part of the Free Church of America. Reach Global is the international mission of the EFCA. So we exist to glorify God by multiplying transformational churches among all people. We really hold firmly on the among all people part. We really see that that's a role for us. We have on the other side of our sandbox our guiding principles, and we have a number of them. We are spirit-empowered. We're word-based and spirit-empowered. That means we go to the Word. That's really the ethos of the EFCA. Get in the Word, and we want to hear where God is telling us to go. We want to listen to the Spirit and say, God, where are you working? Where do you want us to be? How can we do what you want us to do most effectively? If that comes from our meditation on the Word, that's great. If it comes from other people speaking into the lives of our ministry, that's great. However the Spirit wants to speak to us to help us understand where we are going as a mission, we're going to be open to what God has in store for us. We're team-led and team-driven. We really believe in team. We don't want any sole missionaries out there. We're partnership-driven. The whole weekend, this whole conference has really been about partnership. I can unpack that for a long time. I get excited about that, and I don't apologize for my passion on partnership, because I see effective partnerships working well in churches, and I want churches to experience what God can do through them around the world. We empower our personnel. As long as they're in the sandbox, we want them to be able to do what God is calling them to do. We are a permission-granting organization, not a permission-withholding organization. So my staff doesn't have to come to me and ask permission to do something. Does it fit within the sandbox? Yep, go ahead and do it, if that's what God is calling us to do. We practice entrepreneurial thinking. We're going to look at new creative ways to do ministry. We measure effectiveness. That's really been a bit of a push sometimes in ministry, but we actually sit down and say, are we being effective in what we're doing? What are the markers that we're looking at to say this ministry is doing well, this ministry needs to be tweaked, how can we do it better? We want to always measure effectiveness in every ministry area that we work in. It's part of our annual review with all of our staff. It's part of our annual planning with all of our teams. It's part of my KRA development for me individually. What are the markers that I'm going to look at? KRAs are key result areas. What are those things that I look at myself on a monthly basis when I sit down with my key result areas and say, how am I doing? Am I staying on task? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Have I gotten diverted? Because we're going to measure for effectiveness. We do multiplication rather than addition. We don't just want to add churches. We want to multiply churches. We want to see God's hand leading us as we look at areas around the world where churches are being planted beyond what we could ever hope or imagine. We are a learning organization, a lifelong learning organization. We have an entire division within our ministry committed to helping teach our missionaries, to train our missionaries, to help them continue to learn no matter where they are. You know, as pastors in the U.S., you can go to conferences like this and learn. You can go to the national conference, EFCA 1, which I'm sure all of you are going to go to New Orleans, and you can learn. You can go to Exponential Church Planting Conference, and you can learn. Our missionary staff don't always have that flexibility, depending on where they are. But we don't want them to quit learning. We don't want to send them off and say, be blessed. So we have an entire division built around those core competencies that we know missionaries need and want to continue to develop in them. We are a resource for maximum ministry. It's the responsibility of each member of Reach Global to continue to resource our ministry, however that looks, for people, for purse, for prayer. We want to maximize our resources. And we're holistic and integrated in our approach to ministry. We are all about church planting. We are a church planting movement. But we also have a lot of other ministry, holistic ministry opportunities that build into church planting. And we want to see how we can encourage others to come alongside us and help. We have a core focus. That's the bottom of our sandbox. We develop, empower, and release all of our workers. Our goal day in and day out, our focus that we do day in and day out is develop, empower, and release workers. That's multiplication. So with all of my staff, I want to continue to develop them, I want to empower them, and most importantly, I want them to release them to do ministry. With our national partners, we want to develop them, empower them, and release them to do ministry. And we want them to do that with their ministries. So we talk a lot about DER, D-E-R. We're DERing all the time. And then finally, we're committed to health. We want healthy missionaries planting transformational churches on healthy teams in healthy partnership with others. We're all about health. That's the culture of our organization. That's our basis for what we do. That's our ministry mindset. That's our focus. It's interesting that there has been a study done by other major churches in their missions programs. And there was a white paper put out by Leadership Network, which you can get online if you're a member of Leadership Network. And they talked about the 9 game changers of missions. Now, this came about after we created our sandbox that we live in. But it's interesting to see what these 9 game changers are. And I'm going to unpack these just a little bit. This is what the major churches in the U.S., 50 large mega churches, basically, that do a lot with their own mission programs. Here's what they've said they're looking at with regard to missions going forward. Now, it's important that we share this because what I have found historically is that what the large churches are doing, the very large churches, that others then start to model what that is. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. What I think you're going to find is that as we look at these 9 game changers in missions today, that you're going to find that the organization that is your mission sending organization, Reach Global, really has already looked at a number of these things and said, yep, we've got some of these in place and we agree with what the churches are saying and we are responsive to what our churches need to engage their people in mission. Cities. As of May 2007, not that long ago, over half of the world's population lives in cities and it's not going to reverse. That trend is not going to reverse. So sometime May 2007, I'd love to know the exact date. I don't think anybody's that precise in their science. We have reached over half of the population in cities. That's a major trend in missions today. Mutuality, what does that mean, mutuality? That's the future of missions will be the future shaped by mutuality between East and West, North and South, both sending and receiving nations. And we are seeing that happen today within our own organization. In Toulouse, France, we have a totally international team. Michael Gibbons is a Reach Global staff team leader in Toulouse. Michael has team members from Hong Kong. He has team members from Latin America. He has team members from North America. And he has team members from Europe working to reach the ministry focus of Toulouse, which is a heavily Muslim population where he is reaching the lost in that part of the world. That's mutuality. We're bringing people from the East, the West, the North, and the South all together, working together, in an effort to see an impact in various places around the world. Partnering. We've spent a lot of time talking about partnering. What does it look like? It's mutual relationships that go both ways. Sometimes in the mindset of the church in the West, specifically the church in the U.S., partnering was viewed as it's a 60-40, maybe even an 80-20 partnership. You know, we bring 80% to the plate and our partner brings 20%. I think what we're starting to see in partnership and partnering is that this is a 50-50 partnership. We have a lot to learn and a lot to understand from our partners. I was sharing at dinner last night with someone. We were talking about Berlin, and I'm going to spend a little time talking about Berlin later today. But I had a pastor that wanted to do a sabbatical in Europe, and our city team leader in Berlin says, yeah, not really Berlin. I don't find that that works really well with pastor's sabbatical in Germany. I said, well, why not? He goes, because they have a tendency want to teach the German pastors theology. He goes, you know, our German pastors know their theology. They're probably not going to learn anything from us. I appreciate what Enoch said last night. Preaching to pastors is always hard. I'm not going to teach you guys anything new. Now, if that pastor wanted to go over and learn how to minister in a postmodern context and wanted to learn from the Europeans, they would be all over that because they know that. They understand that, and they can share with you what has worked in their world. That's partnering. When we can say, we want to partner in Europe, we want to partner in Germany, and we want to see this happen with the church in Germany, but I want to see this happen with the church in the U.S. and have it go both ways. That's partnership. Investing in leaders. We strongly believe in investing in leaders in Reach Global. We own this particular game changer. We understand that the leaders, that there's movement leaders out there who have not yet been discovered, and we need to find them, and we want to partner with them, and we want to pour resources into them so that they can be effective in ministry, because those are the people that are going to lead the movements around the world that we're going to see major transformational change. That's where we're going to see these Acts 19 locations. That's where we're going to see that impact of 100 million disciples in those movement leaders that exist today and those that are coming up the ranks that we have not yet found. Our biggest challenge that we have as a mission organization is finding those next generation leaders around the world and in the U.S. And I challenge our churches here in the U.S. There are next generation movement leaders sitting in your pews. Find them. Pour your lives into them. Have others pour their lives into them because they're the next generation that's going to continue to lead us forward as a movement, going to lead your churches forward in the movement, and it's going to help us reach that vision of impacting 100 million lives with the gospel. Combining good deeds and good works. Holistic ministry. In every area of the world, we have holistic ministry opportunities. That's a high value for all of our teams. Our international leaders come together two or three times a year as a directional team, and we measure everything because we live in a sandbox. So we ask them, where are holistic ministry opportunities existing in your part of the world? Because we have churches, we have people in the church that want to be part of that. We want to be able to meet that need, and it's biblical. It's what God has called us to do. So where are those challenges that we have? Where are those opportunities that we make available to others to do ministry in a way that really fits who they are? For a long time, and I don't ever speak poorly of our ministry of Reach Global or the international mission of the EFCA, but for a long time, it almost appeared that there was a culture of two different areas of service in Reach Global. You had church planters, and praise God we had church planters, and then you had everybody else. And you see, I look at mission educators that are educating MKs as being a huge part of church planting. And I look at holistic ministries in Global Fingerprints as a huge part of church planting. And I look at people that go over in business as missions as a huge part of church planting. And as an organization, that's on the same level as church planting within Reach Global. If we don't have MKs that are getting the support that they need or families getting the support that they need with their missionary kids in education, that's going to pull them off the field. So dad may be a great church planter, but if the kids are having problems, it's not going to go. We put that value on MK education as high as any other position within our organization. We don't really grade our positions within our organization. They're all valuable. And every single position, every single ministry focus, everything that we see happen on the field is a value to Reach Global and value to our staff. So as you look around your churches, we realize that there are people in our churches that have not felt that they could do anything in missions because, well, I didn't go to Bible school and I don't have an MDiv. What can I do in church planting? Well, you can do a lot of things, an awful lot of things. Let's find out where you might fit. And we challenge churches to send us your brightest and your best. We know that you want to keep it for yourself, but think beyond that. Think globally. And send us your brightest and your best so that we can plug them into where God has wired them, plug them into where God has called them, so that they're doing what God wants them to do globally. Greater financial accountability, another one of the game changers. Churches, rightly, are asking for greater financial accountability around the world. Now, this has to be done within cultural context. If you are supporting a ministry that's got a major project going on, and you say, okay, exactly how did you spend those dollars we sent you? Well, sometimes in cultures, that direct accountability on line items doesn't really exist. But still, you can develop standards for, we spent it this way. We spent the resources this way. Now, we want them to be able to determine how they're going to spend the money, but there should be a greater financial accountability back to the church. We have that same demand of us from the people who support our ministries, even in the U.S. So with regard to crisis response, Reach Global Crisis Response, it's incumbent upon us to say, if you have donated funds for Sandy relief, here's what we're doing. Here's what we're seeing God do, and here's how those funds have helped make ministry happen. We believe that we need greater financial accountability back to our donors and to our churches who support us in ministry. And I hope that you're starting to see that. For a long time, mission organizations could say, well, we're here, send money. Well, that doesn't quite cut it anymore. We are here, send money, and by the way, here's what God's doing through your investment. We believe that our churches want to maximize the return on mission. Can I use that business terminology a little bit? Maximizing our return. We just want to make sure that as a church, we're getting the most that God can do with the resources that we've given Him, maximizing our resources as a church. I think we have the liberty to ask the question, how is that happening in the areas around the world where we see partnership, where we see mutuality, where we see support? Business as missions, a brand new opportunity for expansion of ministry for a lot of people in your churches. We have, surprisingly, business people all over the world who come to us and say, hey, I'm living in Madrid, Spain. I noticed that you guys are doing some church planting work in Madrid. I'm here on business. I work for IBM. Can I help? And every single time we've said, yeah, come on, you can help. Please help. There is a whole culture of people out here because the world has gotten small and the world has gotten flat where people are going back and forth and working all around the globe. And we have believers everywhere who want to come in and help do ministry and keep their day jobs. Now, we also have business as missions where people want to say, this is my day job, business as missions. And we have plenty of opportunities around the globe where we see that happening too, where we can come in and say, I'm in the ag business. Is there anything I can do in Africa with your team? I had a gentleman just ask me that the other day. He said, I'm an ag science guy. I've worked for seed companies forever. I've entered a stage in life where I want to do something different globally. Is there a way that I can make that happen in your organization? Yep, let's see how we can make this work. Focus is a little different than partnership. Focus is where churches are desiring to say, here's the ministry area that means the most globally to our church. So we may be partnering in 3 or 4 or 5 different areas, but we're really going to focus on 1 or 2 or 3 areas because our people in our church understand this ministry. They understand why we do it. It fits who we are as a church, and it's a great extension of our ministry globally. So we're starting to see a lot of that throughout our churches in the Free Church. The day of supporting 65 different missionaries in every church is probably over. Churches are coming to us and say, we want to build stronger relationship with our missionaries. How can we move from 65 to maybe 15? And we help them walk through that strategy. Some of them are doing it very well. Some do it very poorly, but it's happening. We're seeing that happen. And then technology, one of the big game changers in missions today is technology. We talked about this a little bit in our workshop earlier. A few years ago, a missionary in Congo would have to do a day's trip out to find a phone, and to call to the United States would cost about $160 or $150 for about 10 minutes. I can go to Congo today, stand in Kinshasa, and I can make a cell phone call to my wife on Google Phone, and it's going to cost 19 cents a minute. It's amazing. I can Skype from just about anywhere. I can be just about anywhere in the world with an internet connection and talk and actually see the people I'm talking to depending on the bandwidth. Technology is changing the way we do missions as much as anything. And certainly gives us greater flexibility to partner with those areas of the world that we want to see partnership and actually have that part of our body of believers because we can spend time talking to them. We can spend time finding out what's going on in their world. That's what we see as game changers today. I really want to spend a little time on game changers that Paul saw back in his day. We talk about our focus or our vision of a million disciple makers impacting 100 million lives with the gospel and 100 Acts 19 locations, regions or cities around the world. What does that look like? Why Acts 19? Well, if you look at Acts 19, we'll start with verse 8. It says, "And he entered the synagogue and for 3 months spoke boldly, reasoning and persuading them about the kingdom of God. But when some became stubborn and continued in unbelief, speaking evil of the way before the congregation, he withdrew from them and took the disciples with him, reasoning daily in the hall of Tyrannus. This continued for 2 years, so that all the residents of Asia, the Jews and the Greeks, heard the word of the Lord. In Asia Minor, all of the residents, the Jews and the Greeks, heard the word of the Lord 2 years. That's radical transformation. That's what we're talking about with Acts 19. Now, how does that play out? That plays out a lot of different ways, but just think about it. How much fun was it to be in Ephesus at that time? It's like, wow, this is just amazing what God is doing here. I'm just going to take my, you know, I got kicked out of the synagogue. I'm going to go over to the hall. I'm going to go preach for a while. And in a couple years, all of the Jews and Greeks heard the word of the Lord. There's a reason Paul went to Ephesus. Let's look at some of those reasons in today's context. These are the five characteristics of an influential global city. Okay, an influential global city. Business activity, that's one of the characteristics. The value of its capital, markets, the number of Fortune Global 500 firms headquartered there, and volume of goods passed through the city. Ephesus was a major cultural hub of the area at the time. In 27 BCE, Ephesus entered in an era of prominence and prosperity which lasted into the 2nd century Common Era. Augustus made it the capital of the Roman province of Asia, and it received the coveted title of first and greatest metropolis of Asia. Imperial patronage included constructing aqueducts, paving streets, and enlarging agoras. During the Augustan era, Ephesus was the largest commercial center in Asia. In fact, the third largest city in the empire, after Rome and Alexandria, with a population of about 200,000 people. It was an influential global city of the day. We have influential global cities today. Another characteristic of an influential global city is human capital. How well the city acts as a magnet for diverse groups of people and talent. This includes the size of the city's immigrant population, the quality of the universities, the number of international schools, and the percentage of residents with university degrees. You're starting to think about where you went to school. You're starting to think about some of the places you've lived. And you think, okay, how does that factor into where I've been? Am I in an influential global city? I'm in Minneapolis. Maybe so. Information exchange, how well news and information is dispersed about and to the rest of the world. The number of international news bureaus, the level of censorship, the amount of international news in leading local papers, and the broadband subscribers rate. The cultural experience, the level of diverse attractions for international residents. This includes everything from how many major sporting events the city hosts to the number of performing arts venues that are there and diverse culinary establishments it boasts and the sister city relationships that it has. Okay, I'm thinking Minneapolis probably is going to be one of these now because we have good food. It's Norwegian and Swedish, but it's good. And we have a lot of sister cities, and we have major sports venues, although the Twins may not be considered much of a sports team by most of you here. Political engagement, the degree to which a city influences global policymaking, and dialogue. Those are the five major categories that we have today that say this is a complex urban city. This is a major influential city of global influence. Almost all of those characteristics applied to Ephesus in the day. This is nothing new, folks. It just seems new to us. Paul figured it out. He was all over this. I need to go to Ephesus. Now, do you look at Paul's journeys prior? He wanted to go to Asia Minor, and the Spirit said, no, not yet. He goes to Ephesus, and all of the Jews and Greeks in the province of Asia Minor heard the gospel. There was The broadband was really good there. Okay? The travel in and out of Ephesus was unbelievable. The message clearly proclaimed went out from there and impacted the whole region. Now, Paul didn't do that all in of himself. Not every Jew and Greek came to the Hall of Tyrannus. It spread because multiplication happened. It spread because Acts 19 occurred. We can't control the outcome on Acts 19 locations, but we can significantly influence the ministry environment in which we do ministry. So let's look at the ministry environment of Paul. This is the one he created. If you go back to Acts 19, verses 1 through 7, you see that, and it happened that while Apollos was at Corinth, Paul passed through the inland country and came to Ephesus. There he found some disciples. So Paul connected with the existing believers. There were a handful of believers there. Now, they weren't baptized in the name of Jesus. They were baptized in the name of John. So he says, let's get your theology kind of straightened around here. Let's get you fixed up. Can you say that? I can say that. So Paul said, we need to straighten things up a little bit. And those existing believers said, we understand. We got it. So he had this small group of people that he worked with. And then he goes on to say in verse 5, after they were baptized, on hearing this, they were baptized in the name of the Lord Jesus. And when Paul had laid his hands on them, the Holy Spirit came on them and they began speaking in tongues and prophesying. Verse 7 says, there were about 12 of them in all. A very small group of believers. And then Paul practiced proclamation evangelism. Verse 8 says, he entered the synagogue and for 3 months spoke boldly, reasoning and persuading them about the kingdom of God. Paul was not ashamed of the gospel. Paul proclaimed the gospel message. He was strong in proclamation evangelism. Paul intensely trained believers and leaders for a period of time. That was Paul's modus operandi. Everywhere he went, he trained leaders and believers for a period of time, and then blessed them and moved on. Continued to coach them, wrote letters back to them, especially if they're getting sideways. But he was really good about going on and saying, okay, I've turned this ministry over to you. Let's multiply it. I'm going to go plant another church. We're going to go to another city. We're going to see something else happen. And then Paul relied on the power of God to back up the gospel message. It says here, even in verse 11, that and God was doing extraordinary miracles by the hands of Paul. You look at it, and even handkerchiefs or aprons that had touched his skin, were carried away to the sick, and their diseases left them, and the evil spirits came out of them. Amazing, miraculous things were happening in Ephesus at the time Paul was there. And Paul relied on the power of God to back up the gospel message. Folks, we're seeing this happen all over the world today. Amazing things are happening in countries where we can't even participate in the message, where believers have gone back from other areas where we've been able to witness to them, and God is at work doing amazing things. We're seeing transformation occur because the gospel's strong. As I said yesterday, God doesn't need us, but I'm so thankful He wants us to help Him in the message. The results of the ministry environment that Paul intentionally created. There was supernatural response to the gospel message. It was amazing. I don't think anyone would argue that to have the entire province of Asia Minor, all the Jews and Greeks, to have heard the word of the Lord, that's supernatural. That's amazing. I can't imagine what it was like at that time. There were significant persecutions. We find later that, the silversmiths didn't really enjoy this fact that there was so much transformation occurring in Ephesus that they were losing business. It's a bad thing for silversmiths. They got upset. So they have a riot just because of what God was doing in Ephesus. And then we see the whole region, as I said, hearing the gospel. All of the Jews and Greeks in the province of Asia Minor heard the word. Are we intentionally creating ministry environments that could result in Acts 19 movements if God chose to bring a significant harvest? That's the question. Where are we seeing this happen? Do we know? Where does God want us to be? Going back to we're word-based and spirit-empowered. We seek from the Lord daily in Reach Global. Where, Lord, do you want us to be? Where can we see this amazing ministry happen? Not for us, for your kingdom. The answer is yes. We are intentionally creating ministry environments that could result in Acts 19 locations that can bring a significant harvest. We see them around the world, and I do believe with all my heart they exist even within the ministry context that we have here and every location. Let me show you what it looks like briefly. I'm going to show you a short video from Berlin.
Berlin's an incredibly vibrant city. Since reunification in the 1990s, it's reestablished itself again as one of the most influential cities in Europe. It influences arts and media, entertainment, politics, business, and academics very significantly. Yet one of the things about Berlin that, even though it has that significance, is still 98-99% full of unbelief, people that don't follow Christ, and many of those don't believe in God at all.
I didn't believe anything in particular. I didn't know anyone who really had a faith in Christ, and I just didn't think about it. I had no particular concept of God in my mind. But all that was not enough for me. The question for me was, what can I do next to fill my life and to make it meaningful?
I grew up in a non-Christian background, so church was never the plan. My dad always was against church, and I really started to think about purpose in life when my dad left our family. And I needed to crash to find God, or God found me. It was in 2003, February, when I ended up in hospital after 4 days of no sleep and lots of drugs. And I crashed there and woke up the next morning and knew that I'm still alive because the God of the Bible wanted me to be alive.
What's happening right now in terms of what God is doing, it seems like the church is starting to emerge. There's more spiritual interest being piqued. The church has gone from being very, very small to being about 1 to 2% of the population are becoming believers, Christ followers. Our primary purpose is to multiply healthy churches among all people. And in a city like Berlin, there's a lot of diversity. So we're focusing on 4 areas to help us do that. Church planting, a lot of variety in what kind of churches. Developing indigenous leaders is the second thing. Very important to develop the next generation of leaders. Strategic partnerships between people in Berlin and outside of Berlin is the third area. And then the final area is businesses missions, where we're trying to create a crossroad between the marketplace and the church, where the two come together and exist. So for us, what's significant is people that would desire to come and live out their lives among others. Come and be yourself, and let us find a place of ministry for you in a city that has a ton of opportunities and a lot of creative things going on.
I appreciated the testimony of your church planters this morning. Give me the name of the first guy. Scott, your mission of your church is, you're a missional church. We want to just be there. We want to be in the community, be part of the community. Your emphasis is on being there. I think you probably heard that in Mike's presentation. It's like, we want people to come here and be with us. Be a Christian, be a Christ follower in a really hard place. Just come and be. So the missional objectives of what you're trying to accomplish are consistent with what we're trying to see here, is how can we be part of ministry in a diverse place like Berlin? Connecting the dots. Connecting the dots to 9 game changers. Connecting the dots to our global sandbox of Reach Global. Connecting the dots to our vision statement of 1 million disciple makers impacting 100 million people with the gospel and 100 Acts 19 locations around the world. Over the years, Reach Global's created terms specifically designed to allow Acts 19 results, should God bless. All Reach Global, all of our divisions are looking to see, where are those Acts 19 locations that we have? Berlin is probably the most developed strategy that we have currently for Acts 19. And it's taken Mike Edwards, the man in the video, a long time to exegete that city to say, how can we move ahead here with you? He moved to Berlin in 2008. So we're just really launching this program this year of saying, there's a great need in Berlin. There's great things happening. For example, Mike didn't share the numbers. In the last 10 years, the Christian population, evangelical Christian population of Berlin has gone from around 5,000 believers to 50,000 believers today. That's pretty significant growth. So when he said 1 to 2% of the population, that's huge in Berlin. And we're seeing pockets of ministry happening that we've been invited by the Berliners to come in and say, help us in these ministry areas. We have a partnership with Together for Berlin. It's the evangelical organization of Berlin who's come together in partnership themselves because they saw what was happening in their community. They have a passion to see Acts 19 occur. There are those believers that were already there, and they're saying, how can we make this happen even more? They've invited us to the table as Reach Global to say, how can we resource your ministry? So when we're looking to send short-termers to Berlin, and when we talk about Berlin, we have a need for about 80 short-term people right now for 2 years, for a two-year term, 80 different spots. It's because our partners over there said, man, if you could send me an American for 2 years, I could really use them. I could use them because they're Americans and they'll draw into our ministry. I could use them because we could use the help in ministry. I can use them, but they need to be here for a while because they need to learn who we are. They need to learn a little language. They need to learn a little culture. But we can use them for 2 years. And maybe, just maybe, they'll stay. But even if they don't, send us the next one because that's how our partners want us. Mike has gone to them and said, I don't come with a program. I don't come with the answers for ministry in Berlin. You Berliners know that better than I ever could. I come with the resources of 450,000 people that sit in the pews of the Evangelical Free Church of America churches every Sunday. And a lot of them want to be involved in ministry. What do you need? How can we make that happen together? That's what Acts 19 looks like in Berlin, where we've just seen tremendous growth and gospel penetration is really starting. What's unique about this city? It's a complex urban center, and it allows us to learn in the context of complexity. It is our learning lab as we look at complex urban centers for missions and Acts 19 locations in cities for Reach Global. It's a social, media, financial, influential center for Europe. It is one of the most powerful cities in the world. You see that played out every day in the news. When Greece was going down because of their financial issues, when Spain is having, and Portugal, and Italy, and all those other countries are having financial situations, financial issues, who's the most prominent voice in the solution with the euro? It's the Germans, and it's Merkel. They're prime minister right now. But it's the German economy which is pushing the EU. It's one of the most influential places in the world. We have ministry partners who want to work with us toward common objectives. The relationship we have with Together for Berlin is amazing. They're not all free churches, by the way. And we're okay with that because it's bride over brand. In fact, we're working with the Vineyard Church, planting 100 churches around the city of Berlin. They want to see transformation in 100 different neighborhoods around Berlin. We want to see how we can help make that happen. Together for Berlin has welcomed us with open arms. They said, if you really come without your program, come without your predisposed solutions for fixing our city, please come. And if you really come with those 450,000 people behind you, like you said you did, Mike, come on, because we can use them. And we have a leader who's a broad vision and has done his homework in understanding and exegeting the city of Berlin. That's what it takes to understand Acts 19. Paul knew what he was doing because God had led him there. He knew that he needed to be in Ephesus. He knew that there was going to be significant transformational change in Ephesus and in a very short time. We feel the same about Berlin. So what continues to be unique about it, it's got a very significant ethnic population. In fact, almost every ethnic population you want to look at is in Berlin. After unification, there were a lot of people who were in East Berlin that came from communist countries. So there's a large Vietnamese population in Berlin. And they have connections back to Vietnam. So we're actually starting to connect the dots between our ministry that we're launching in Ho Chi Minh City and the ministry that we already have going in Berlin. And we're connecting the dots between what's happening in Berlin and the Vietnamese population in San Francisco. And it all works together because there's travel between all of those points, between all of those people groups. It has a deep interest in our international leaders around Reach Global. Our directional team has a learning opportunity to help us initiate similar projects in areas around the world. So we're looking at Mexico City. I mentioned Ho Chi Minh City. I mentioned Bangkok and Tokyo and places in Africa even. Now, in Africa, you're not going to have the million-plus population cities, but you have the regional areas where there's significant impact, where those characteristics that we just talked about for the impact of a major global city are regionally focused. And so we know that there's places in Africa where this is going to happen. We're going to see this type of transformation. It allows us to focus on a place where we can learn significant lessons in penetrating the gospel and in an entire city with the gospel. It's one thing to have a dream and desire to do it. It's another to have that experience to help us make it happen. And it represents the future of the globe. As I said earlier, 50% of the world's population lives in the city today. By 2015, 75% of the population will live in cities. These are really big cities. If you've been to Asia, you know what I'm talking about. If you've been in China, there's lots and lots of cities, over 20 million people. The migration is happening. People are moving to the city. So what's unique about Berlin? It's where God seems to be leading us. And there's a consensus among Reach Global leaders that in Europe and globally that this is a place for us to do ministry. That's one Acts 19 location. Now, that's the city Acts 19 location. But does Acts 19 occur just in the cities alone? Absolutely not. So let me talk briefly about what I see as an Acts 19 location in Logos, India, in Ahmedabad, India. Logos is our ministry partner. Logos planted about 2,000 churches last year, and just under 2,000 churches the year before that. Their development in church planting has been beyond what any of us could ever hope or imagine. They pour into their leadership, we pour into their leadership as Reach Global, significant resources of time, energy, and money to help them develop their pastors, who most have maybe been believers for 1, 2, 3 years, and they're pastoring that next group, that next church. We're seeing amazing transformation in 8 of the provinces of India through Logos. We're seeing, because of that work, we're seeing what happened in Acts 19 happen in Logos. Our pastors in Orissa, the Orissa area of India, have been heavily persecuted. Many of them have lost their lives for the sake of the gospel. We opened up Global Fingerprints, which is our child sponsorship program in Logos, India. It's called Global Fingerprints Logos. And in the area of Orissa, we had to suspend the distribution of our resources to the kids that we're sponsoring, simply because the persecution is so great on the families. These are non-believer families in many cases, but the persecution is so great on them from accepting money from our ministry that they said we really have to suspend it because it's putting the families at risk, putting the children that receive these donations, these gifts, at risk. Strong persecution. We're seeing amazing, miraculous transformation beyond what we could ever imagine happening in Logos. We have a video. I didn't include it today. I'm just going to tell you the story from this video because I had the privilege of actually being there at the time we were shooting this particular video of Wilson Barria. Wilson is he's the leader of Logos Ministry. We were at a training session with his leaders, and I was capturing some footage for our churches that partner with Logos so they could understand what he does more effectively. And Wilson was sharing a story about a lady that's part of his ministry. And he says, Brian, this lady she's just a real prayer warrior. She's got an 8th grade education. She's part of our church in a city outside of Ahmedabad, which is where Wilson's located. He said, she's just an amazing prayer warrior. And in her city, some children were playing on a building that was under construction, 3 stories up on the top roof. And one of the boys, who was 8 years old, fell off the roof and off the ceiling and fell to the ground 3 stories and died. He hit his head. He was dead. And his parents came over and picked up this child. And quickly a crowd came around because it's a busy area of the city. And someone said, there's a lady that we know who has prayed for people and they've been healed. Maybe you should take your son to her. She's a Christian. And so the parents, thinking that was probably a good thing, said, sure, you know, we'll try anything. They take their son to this lady who has an 8th grade education, real prayer warrior at Wilson's churches, and brought the child to her. They lay the child at her feet, actually in her arms, and they said, pray for our son for healing. And she realized that this child wasn't alive. And her first thought was, I've never prayed for anyone who's dead. I've only prayed for those who are alive for healing. But I'm going to be faithful to the Lord, and I'm going to pray for healing of this child. And she began to pray, and she felt the boy move. And the boy got up and walked over to his parents. And 700 people in that community accepted Christ that day because of that woman. Now, I tell you that story, and it sends chills up my spine. Because while I was there, I wasn't doing the filming. I don't film. I was holding the microphone. That's the best I can do. She was there. She was with us during this time at the training center we were at. I don't have to justify the story. I just know that it occurred. And God did miraculous things. And because of that, 700 people came to know the Lord in that city, and they planted 2 churches out. See, that's Acts 19 all over again in India today. And we're seeing that happen around the world in various places. How does Acts 19 look in the Allegheny District? Where are those Acts 19 locations? I don't know that they exist everywhere. In fact, I'm confident they don't. And that's not speaking poorly of our other ministries. My goodness, we have ministry all over the world. We have wonderful teams doing absolutely amazing work in other cities around the world and in other regions around the world. And through the providence of God, it's not necessarily an Acts 19 location, but it's a great work. But are there those Acts 19 locations around the U.S. and other places around the world where we can partner and say, God, let us come with you and see this happen. Let's see this transformation exist. Because we feel that's what God has called us to do as a movement, to see 100 Acts 19 locations around the world. Now, you'll notice we say to see 100 Acts 19 locations around the world. Because we're not going to create the Acts 19 location. Only God will do that. But if the elements are there, if we feel God leading us there, how can we come along and be used by Him effectively to make it happen? How can we pray into that? How can we partner with that? What's our role as a church? And how can we make that part of the plan for our movement? That's what excites me. That's what gets me up in the morning when I think about what I'm doing. And I want to see that. I want to be part of that. Not just Acts 19. I want to be part of seeing 1 million disciple makers influencing 100 million lives for the gospel. I may never be able to participate in an Acts 19 location. I don't know that God has that for my life, other than the role that I get to play in Reach Global, which, by the way, is pretty amazing. I don't know that I'm going to be able to be the Mike Edwards in Berlin and say, yep, here's where God is doing this. But I can be one of the 1 million impacting 100 million with the gospel. I get really, really excited about what God is doing around the world, and He's allowed us to be part. So it's my prayer for us that as we go away from here, our hearts are a little more stirred for what God is doing globally, that our vision is probably a little broader than it might have been when you came in, and that you're seeing people within your churches that are ready to be that next generation of mission leader, that are ready to take the reins and run with it, that are ready to be the next generation of leader within your church and be able to be impacted significantly in your region, to have your church impact your region, your city, your locale significantly with the gospel, outside the four walls of your church. That's my prayer.